This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 10th of April, 2026. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. I introduce our readers for this week, Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Jackie Dolan.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. So we start with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. As you listen to the recordings, you can remember. Please remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can also access the recording through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Recordings also available on Southampton Community Radio stations Awaz Radio and Fiesta FM. Right, so we go on with our headline stories. The first from Deborah, please.
Anxious wait for decision on school bus. Parents are anxiously awaiting the decision over their appeal to save a bus service that takes children to school. The fight will go on. Those are the words of one parent after Hampshire County Council announced it will postpone plans to cut a school bus service, which takes children from Kingsworthy to Henry Beaufort School in Hairstock. Amy Nichols, whose 11-year-old attends the school and who has acted as key voice in the battle against the cuts, said that parents are relieved by the decision to postpone the scrapping of the bus to July, while it waits for the outcome of an appeal, expected imminently. She said, "There is relief that the immediate shutting has been removed from the beginning of term. Everyone was very anxious that it would be taken away after Easter. The fight will go on. We are waiting for the Stage 2 appeal result. If we are unsuccessful, we will continue with more appeals and go to the Ombudsman. We feel relieved for the next term, as well as the Year 11s who are doing their GCSEs, but we're still worried about the upcoming Year 6s. Everyone is relieved, but still resolute." Part of the reason for the appeal was the Council's plans to replace the bus with an alternative walking route. It involves crossing the junction of Springvale Road and Down Farm Lane, as well as using several unmade roads. Parents have warned that the route, which takes more than an hour, is unsafe. Ms. Nichols said that 13 families filled out Stage 2 appeals of a possible 150 families who would be affected by the bus cuts. She continued, "The 13 speak for our community. There's been a lot of effort for the families to appeal the decision. There's been a lot of stress and time looking into it to provide counter-arguments. It has taken up a lot of effort. The campaign is expecting to hear the results of the appeal on either April the 8th or April the 9th. Danny Chambers, MP for Winchester, has welcomed the news of the bus cuts being delayed. He said, "I am delighted that Conservative County Council bosses have finally listened to the calls from parents, carers and students about the short-sighted and dangerous decision to remove the bus from Kingsworthy to Henry Beaufort School. This service is confirmed to remain in place until the end of the academic year, just in time for all those about to take exams. Just last week, I presented a petition signed by over 500 constituents on this in Parliament, urging the government to step in to save this service. While this is tremendous news, we must look towards the next academic year. my colleague Jackie Porter and I will continue to work with local parents, carers and students to push Hampshire County Council to maintain this service so that it is available for students for years to come. We wouldn't have achieved this result without the Kingsworthy community coming together to make its voice heard. The campaign continues to keep this bus running for the next academic year and beyond.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Man is given bravery award for sea rescue. A Hampshire man will receive an award from the Royal Humane Society after he saved two boys from drowning. Matthew Winter, 51, of Chiltern Candover near Alsford, is to receive a Royal Humane Society bronze medal after he saved two young boys from drowning in the Sea of Salcombe in Devon on August 26th last year. He'd been staying on a boat in Devon with his family and friends, and they had intended to sail to the Channel Islands. However, the weather in the aftermath of Storm Erin was so rough that the voyage was cancelled, and Mr. Winter, along with his family, had walked to a beach. Despite the rough seas, Mr. Winter went into the sea to splash in the waves that were crashing onto the shoreline. However, he then spotted the two boys, aged 12 and 14, who'd gone into the sea and were in trouble. They were out of their depth and being pulled away from the shore by a rip tide. Despite the danger to himself, Mr. Winter, a keen runner, cyclist and surfer, decided he had no choice but to go into the water to try and save them. He swam out into the heavy seas with no buoyancy aid or wetsuit, reached the boys and managed to grab hold of them and grab them onto some rocks until further help arrived to get them all safely back to the shore. As well as the bravery medal he is to receive, Mr. Winter has been praised by Andrew Chapman, Secretary of the Royal Humane Society. To say what he did was brave would be an understatement, said Mr. Chapman. He was at serious risk of being swept away by the heavy waves and the riptide, but he ignored the danger to himself. His only thought was to save the two boys from drowning, and he succeeded. He was a true hero. The medal he is to receive is one of our very highest honour, but in this case, it's richly deserved. Mr. Winter said, "It all happened quite quickly, and I just knew they needed help. I was glad to see them back with their mum." The roots of the Royal Humane Society stretch back nearly 250 years. Other than awards made by the Crown, it's the premier national body for honouring bravery in the saving of human life. It was founded in 1774 by two of the day's eminent medical men, William Hawes and Thomas Coggan. Their primary motive was to promote techniques of resuscitation. However, as it emerged that numerous people were prepared to put their own lives at risk to save others, the award scheme evolved, and today a variety of awards are made, depending on the bravery involved. The Society also awards non-healthcare professionals who perform a successful resuscitation. Since it was set up, the Society has considered more than 90,000 cases and made over 220,000 awards. The Society is a registered charity which receives no public funding and is dependent on voluntary contributions.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
No question on need for second GP surgery. An MP has said that there is no question about the need for a second doctor's surgery in a Hampshire town. Danny Chambers, MP for Winchester, said that Bishop's Waltham needs a surgery that is four times the size of the current one. In a letter to the Chief Executive of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board, he said, "When originally opened, Bishop's Waltham GP surgery had 7,000 patients on its books. Now it has 14,000. Talking to the Echo, Mr. Chambers said, "We knock on a lot of doors. Healthcare and GP access is the number one thing people bring up. There's no question that we need a new surgery. The population has doubled and current regulations mean that the rooms would be considered too small if they were built now. We need twice as many doctors, but also the rooms need to be twice as big. At the moment, the surgery hasn't got enough space or rooms and needs to change." Mr. Chambers said local councillors have managed to get porter cabins added, but a more permanent solution is needed. He added that Bishop's Waltham has a young demographic due to new housing, but lacks the infrastructure currently to go with it. Mr. Chambers said, "The public wants it, the councillors want it, the doctors want it. The only people holding it up are the Integrated Care Board." He said that a site has already been allocated, but securing the funding with the Integrated Care Board seems to be a stumbling block. In the comments of Mr. Chambers' Facebook post, one resident said, "The current building is unfit for purpose, with poor disabled access and very limited disabled parking spaces." Another added, "Bishop's Waltham surgery is not fit for purpose now." One comment said, "Same needs for Romsey, new houses everywhere and no new GP surgeries." James Roach, Director of Primary Care and Local Care at NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight, said, "We recognise the need for additional space at Bishop's Waltham GP surgery. We are working closely with all partners involved to explore the options available and ensure patients can continue to access high quality care from suitable premises into the future."
Thank you, Jackie. My headline story is Petition Aims to Fight Almshouse Team Cuts. Residents are continuing to challenge proposed cuts to the services at an almshouse in Winchester. A petition to save the welfare team at St John's Winchester has already gathered 336 signatures on change.org after being set up by Tracy Grace last month. The movement came about after the charity announced its proposals to deregister from the CQC following internal consideration of regulatory, operational and long-term sustainability factors. The latest update from St John's has confirmed that no resident will be left without appropriate care or support, and is working closely with Hampshire County Council to ensure continuity of care where commissioned regular support is required. The welfare team were not given notice on March the 31st, as previously proposed, but campaigners say there are still plans to reduce the welfare team from 18 to 5 people. Concerns remain about the safety and security of the residents. The petition said, "As residents at St John's Almshouses in Winchester, we are deeply concerned about the proposed changes that would deregulate our domiciliary care service. This move threatens the invaluable support provided by our current welfare team, whose presence has been a cornerstone of our community's well-being and sense of stability. We urge the St John's Almshouse Winchester Board of Trustees to reconsider their decision. Instead of dismantling an efficient and compassionate care model, they have the opportunity to continue a long tradition of caregiving by showing that they value the well-being of their residents above all." The charity has also confirmed that no redundancies have been announced, no final staffing structure has been decided, and there is currently no set end date for the existing service. Previously talking to The Chronicle, Tim Bissett, Chief Executive of St John's Winchester, said, "This consultation is about finding a model that allows us to use our resources wisely, remain financially sustainable, and continue to provide safe, supportive almshouse living for all our residents, not just now, but long into the future. The St John's Action Group have formally challenged the board's proposals, sending a letter of objection to the charity's trustees. The letter was also copied to Danny Chambers, MP, Winchester City Councillors and the Care Quality Commission. Residents argue the proposed staff reduction doesn't seem to be backed by proper safety or risk evaluations. The petition also highlights that they are alarmed about the alleged elimination of 24/7 human oversight. The group is urging people to continue sharing and signing the petition while waiting for a suitable response from the trustees. A residents' meeting took place on March the 27th, and the resident consultation period remained open until April the 2nd. All feedback received is said to be carefully reviewed before any decisions are finalised. Right, so as usual, we go on with the death notices, starting with Deborah, please.
Heinzen, Helen Felicity Heinzen, MBE, peacefully at home on the 13th of March, aged 91.
Hurst, Dr. Katrina Naomi Hurst, peacefully at home on the 10th of March, aged 50.
Smith, Rosemary Smith, on the 22nd of March, aged 72.
Pike, Phyllis Rosemary Pike, peacefully, 25th of March.
Townsend, Ros Townsend, peacefully at Abbott's Barton Care Home on the 31st of March, age 95.
Thank you. Now we go on to letters to the editor. Nine letters this week on a variety of subjects, but mostly about the bus station, starting with Deborah, please.
Yes, this is one about the bus station from Sue Webb. I'm adding my voice to the protests concerning the closure of the bus station in Winchester. Today I counted 10 buses in the bus station and 5 in the Broadway. Add to that the summer tour coaches and the coaches bringing visitors to the Christmas market in the winter. Never mind that it has been there for as long as I can remember and is part of my childhood. It is an essential hub, and its closure will bring further chaos to central Winchester. Sue Webb, Quarry Road, St Giles Hill.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Not about the bus station.
No.
This is headed Social Reform and comes from Terry Butler. I was intrigued by Yin and Ezra, your new columnist's contribution on social care. As he reports, there have already been 22 reviews of the funding of social care, some by a number of very distinguished figures. However, most of the conclusions of which have been kicked into the long grass by various governments. He comments that a national care system is being examined once again, which would combine health and social care into one organisation, though with no conclusion expected until 2028. Yinan's message of hope that the current review by Baroness Louise Casey is understandable wishful thinking, but not a plan. So, why hasn't this happened already? The reality is that it is simply because social care is run by local government and would be highly controversial to take over, especially with the introduction of local government reforms to the new unitary authorities, and as well as being in dire straits financially. And of course, the NHS is government run. So, what is the solution, if any? I believe that strong legislation is required to require local authorities and local NHS trusts to work together to act as one. The best already do so. As Yin and Ezra's former colleague in Hampshire County Council, as Director of Social Services for the authority, which in the early 1990s included both Southampton and Portsmouth, I was responsible for social care in all its forms and enjoyed the halcyon days of good funding secured by Virginia Ponsonby and the Sir Roy Griffiths report from the Thatcher government. So we were able to build up user-focused services and strike strong integrative services with our NHS colleagues in the Strategic Health Authority. For example, jointly funding a range of new adapted nursing care homes to reduce bed blocking and the costly purchasing of privately run homes all that time. This all required strong political officers and staff leadership and, most importantly, trust. All those skills are still out there and the challenge is to harness them. Terry Butler, Lansdowne Avenue, St Cross.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Yes, this is about the bus stations, from Andrew Beadle, entitled The Public Needs to Know About Bus Station. I understand that there is a proposal to close the central bus station as part of the Central Winchester Regeneration Plan, and the buses would drop off and pick up passengers in Silver Hill and the Broadway. The consultants advising the council are quoted as saying they will adopt a holistic approach to the public transport issue. But what does this mean in practice? Bus passengers are entitled to know what the outline of this proposal is. I assume that some buses, like the number 64 Winchester to Alton, will continue to use the Broadway as at present. But what will happen to the other buses serving the east of the city, as well as the park and ride? Will they just use one of the bus stops, depending upon their direction of travel? At present, buses and coaches cause considerable congestion on the Broadway, but will this also happen in Silver Hill? The public is entitled to know in outline what is likely to happen before it is a fait accompli. Too many mistakes have been made on this project over the years, so let us get this issue right. With local elections just a few weeks ago, I should like to see the views of candidates on this important issue in their literature, rather than just generalised attacks on rival parties. And that's from Andrew Beadle of Milesdown Place, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. I've also got a letter about the bus station. It must be the shortest ever. As regular users of the bus station, we are astounded. The City Council wants to remove it. Surely bus travel should be encouraged, and it is a perfect position. That's written by Jeremy Vose of Andover. Deborah, please.
And the next letter, which is about police stations, from J.D. Cattle. I refer to your page in last week's paper with reference to historic chapter as police station is reopened to public on the Chronicle March 27th. Miss Jones called the reopening as a historic chapter and added, I'm really pleased this is the ninth police station that I've opened in the last year. She goes on to say, I think I'm the only PCC who has been able to open police stations at the volume I have, giving the public back what they want, which is a front counter and the ability to speak to a police officer. She has also stated there will be further stations opening over the next 12 months, and we have more police officers. Bring back the local bobbies. Great, but what about the Alsford area and local police cover? I pass the fire station daily. There are no civilian cars on site, only police vehicles stationary. It can be a whole week that they're there, which means that there must be no local cover. So when might we see Alsford Police Station open? When would we see police officers actually on the beat? As an ex-Hampshire police officer, 27 years experience, with vast local knowledge, followed by 10 years' experience as first of the station duty officer, civilian, in Eastleigh, I know you can't get the locals on board without the simple word trust. To get this, you must talk to people. When they trust you, they open up on local knowledge and what's going on. For your info, I'm involved with Alsford Watercress Festival. I've been involved for 22 years and the chair for that time. 24 years at Alsford Bowls Club, with the Town Council, where I helped to create the Alsford allotments from a bare field, having received the Winchester Mayor's Award for Services to the community, and for 22 years helped Alsford Surgery with its prescription deliveries to the rural community. J.D. Cattle, Alsford.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Back to the bus station.
Oh, wow.
Elderly will suffer. My wife went to the bus stop in the Broadway on a wet day some 10 minutes before the due arrival of the 69. It arrived 20 minutes late. There were many people waiting for the bus, so she had to stand out in the rain as all the seats were taken. My wife has recently had a knee replacement operation. This stretch of pavement is also a busy passing pedestrian area. I have a broken bone in my back and need a place to sit down in the dry whilst waiting for a bus, or I cannot travel by bus. The main users of the buses are elderly pensioners who have had to give up their cars. I'd also point out that the 69 is not a reliable service. On four occasions recently, the Fareham to Winchester bus failed. Twice it was taken out of service at Fareham due to a mechanical failure. Once a wing mirror fell off en route and was taken out of service. Another time it arrived over 30 minutes late due to low power. People have worked all their lives deserve a decent public transport service which requires a proper modern bus station with toilet facilities. Soon they will have the opportunity to vote for a local government that will provide this. Crawford Wright, Chapel Road, Swanmore.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie.
This letter from Stephen Percy is about public abuse. In this country, we take pride in the fairness and rigour with which politics are conducted. All parties should get a fair crack of the whip. Yet two recent developments, one local and one national, are potentially undermining this principle. Locally, the Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner's leaflet, accompanying the 2026-27 council tax bill, should set out how Hampshire Police spends our money. Yet this year, it looks more like an election leaflet in support of the Commissioner's mayoral campaign. It is an abuse of public funds and should warrant a reference to the Electoral Commission. Of more national significance is the extent to which GB News has effectively become the Reform Party's TV channel. In the UK, all TV channels have a legal responsibility to be accurate and truthful in order to retain their licence to broadcast. The way GB News blatantly drives a coach and horses through the law is shocking, exceeded only by the dereliction of duty by Ofcom, the body supposed to regulate it. GB News is less a public broadcaster than a party propaganda channel. This should not be tolerated, and we must not let it happen. And that's from Stephen Percy of Avington Park Lane in Easton.
Thank you, Jackie. The next letter is written by Wendy Wyatt, and it is headed King's Walk. Ian Tate is right that King's Walk has been neglected. Chronicle Letters, March 26. The upper floors have been empty for years, but to suggest demolition is the only solution is short-sighted and out of touch with Winchester's real needs. I have worked with architects Turner Works and Igloo Regeneration on a business case to transform King's Walk into a creative enterprise zone, a proven model for affordable workspace, start-up incubation and stronger links between students and employment. With high youth underemployment and a large student population, Winchester could benefit enormously from this forward-looking approach. Too often debate is reduced to aesthetics, as if the only question is whether the building looks nice. That is aesthetic nostalgia masquerading as strategy. Cities are not museum pieces. They are places where people work, innovate, and build livelihoods. Developers have engaged positively and even pursued LEP reserve funding from Hampshire County Council. Yet Winchester City Council opted to back an industrial-scale abattoir over the creative enterprise zone model, a decision that undermines its net zero ambitions and ignores lower carbon, locally rooted economic opportunities. The ground floor businesses are already vital. I own one of them. They provide employment, support local suppliers, and support Winchester's social and economic life. King's Walk residents have survived years of flooding, antisocial behaviour, and years of uncertainty. We deserve support, not dismissal. Public backing is clear. Nearly 1,000 people supported King's Walk as a creative enterprise zone when surveyed. That shows there is an appetite for a practical, ambitious and socially valuable future, one that balances economy, environment and civic purpose. Winchester does not need more demolition or nostalgia. It needs imagination, leadership, and courage to see potential where others see only inconvenience. That is the kind of regeneration the city actually deserves, and something we could all be proud of. That is written by Wendy Wyatt, the owner of South Downs Social, King's Walk, Winchester. Deborah, please.
The next letter is from David Elton, and it's entitled Litter Capital. I read with great interest the article about Councillor Martin Todd's vision for Winchester as the wine capital of England, of Chronicle March 19. Given such tremendous and positive ambition, could he perhaps take a look at all the roads that feed the tourists into Winchester? The first and last impressions of our fine city and the South Downs National Park are of rubbish. Either side of all the feeder roads, the A272, the M3, the A34, the Winnell roundabout, surely the council needs to address this and not continue to ignore the problem that it has done for years now. David Elton, Longwood, Usselbury.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard?
And in a similar vein, here's Andrew Goodall. Something which seems is overlooked at the moment is the state of the A3 with litter. It's an absolute disgrace that these roads have the verges cut and the litter shredded and just left. I wrote to East Hampshire District Council and they simply said they didn't liaise with highways, so the litter wasn't picked. I travel up and down this road every day and it's like driving through a rubbish tip. It's not acceptable. Every stretch of road has litter on it, and don't get me started on the slip roads. It's about time somebody did a report on this and named and shamed these councils who are failing in their duties to clear our roads. Andrew Goodall, White Dirt Lane, Field.
What an address. White, yes, okay. Well, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836, or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, I have overlooked the reading of the Christian comment, so can we go to, yep, over to Jackie, please?
Christian comment is entitled "We Can All Travel on the Road to Emmaus" and is written by Moira Redmond. There are many famous aspects to Easter. Even those who are not religious will know about the crucifixion and the resurrection. There is one less well-known story that Christians keep in their hearts, a quiet, almost uneventful moment after the pain of the crucifixion and the glory of the resurrection. Not much happens, but the story has resonated with believers for 2,000 years, and they keep coming back to it and finding more in it every time. It's often called the Road to Emmaus, and it is found in Luke's Gospel, chapter 24. Two of the disciples are walking from Jerusalem to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles. As they walk, they discuss the recent terrible events. This is Easter Sunday, and so far they know only that the body has disappeared. A man joins them and walks with them and asks about what they were talking about. They say to him, "Don't you know what's been happening in Jerusalem these past few days?" And they bring him up to date. His response is, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And he then tells them what the scriptures say about him. Because, of course, this is Jesus Christ himself. They just haven't recognized him. When they reach Emmaus, they all sit to eat. The stranger took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. Such a simple story. It may be hard to see why it is so important to Christians. There are many interpretations of it. Only one disciple, Cleopas, is named. Is it possible the other is a woman? If it is a couple, is it a reference back to the story of Adam and Eve? What is the importance of the table and eating and that version of communion, recognisable down the centuries? Another key feature is that these are not apostles, the inner circle. They are more lowly disciples. Yet Christ has chosen them to appear to. There is hope for all of us. And how does it speak to us today? It is a metaphor. Goodness and glory are there if we just look in the right place. Maybe we haven't recognised it. Even when times are hard and bad things have happened, if you look around, you will find something to help you fight your fears and give you hope. Jesus will meet you on the road. He is there if you look for him. The key phrase for some of us comes when the pair realise what has happened and ask, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked to us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? Our hearts burning within us is such a great thing to experience. It was written by Moira Redmond.
Thank you, Jackie. But let's have editorial comment read by Richard, please.
Well, this was written before today, which is not quite the same. But anyway, why are sunny days good for you? After months of grey skies and drizzle, Hampshire is finally basking in sunshine. And judging by the smiles on faces across Winchester, it feels long overdue. This has been one of the wettest winters. So far in 2026, there has been more than 370 millimetres of rain at the Environment Agency climate station at Otterbourne. This is not far short of half the long-term annual average between 1990 and 2020, but in only 3 months. Readers can follow the weather in our weekly feature on the country page on page 52. The first real warmth of spring brings people out into the high street, parks and gardens, soaking in that unmistakable lift that light and colour bring. There's an almost tangible shift in mood when the clouds part. Cafe customers spill out onto pavements, people stroll along the Itchen, and neighbours once hidden behind steamed-up windows linger at garden gates to catch up. Well, perhaps not the last one. It's as though the county itself reawakens. The sun doesn't just brighten the landscape, it brightens attitudes. Science often reminds us that sunlight triggers the production of serotonin, the chemical in our brains that promotes feelings of happiness and well-being. But you don't need a textbook to see the evidence. It's written across every cheerful exchange and relaxed conversation happening outdoors. So, let the sunshine continue. It may not solve every problem, but it does remind us of perspective, that the darkest days give way to light, and that something as simple as blue sky can reinvigorate a whole community.
Ah. let's hear from Deborah, who's going to read about Bill Garham's view of the news, please.
Yes, and this is entitled, excuse me, Tree Ring-Fenced for Care. Winchester City Council has erected a picket fence around a tree in a city centre park to protect it while it's being cared for. This fence has been put up around a handkerchief tree, Davidia involucrata, in Abbey Gardens. This is so it can have some extra support to ensure its long-term health. A city council spokesman said, the handkerchief tree, also known as the dove tree or ghost tree, needs some extra support to ensure its long-term health. Currently, we're reducing the soil compaction around the tree, as compacted soil can limit water uptake and root health. Whilst this is happening, we need to prevent footfall around the tree, which is why the fence is in place. The council was unable to estimate how long the fence will be in place, as that will depend on how well the tree recovers. And it's accompanied by a photograph of the Abbey Gardens with a tree with a fence around it.
Thank you, Deborah. I've got the opinion piece this week, written by Kimberly Barber, and it's headed, Why Pay for a Subscription? My last column sat behind the online paywall. It was available, as ever, in a printed paper, but if you wanted to read my ramblings about the industry online, you had to pay the princely sum of £1 and take out a digital subscription. And thank you to those 983 people who already do exactly that. Your support is genuinely appreciated. This prompted a bit of criticism. Why, some people wailed, should we have to pay for this? Others asked, whatever happened to a free press? An ironic question, given newspapers have never actually been free in any meaningful monetary sense. So, here's how it works. Most content on our website sits behind a light gate. That means you can read up to 20 articles a month for free. After that, you're asked to log in to access a further 20, with the currency being your email address and details. If you click beyond those 40 articles, you hit the hard gate, which requires payment. Some articles, those of significant public interest, such as missing people or appeals, health alerts or emergency information, are always free to access. Others, including my column and other exclusive journalism, investigations, letters, reviews or original news articles, are automatically hard-gated. You need a digital subscription to read them. Or, if you're especially committed to not paying, you could always wait until Thursday, head to the newsagents, read it in store, and risk getting shouted at by the shopkeeper. Ethical dilemma aside, I wouldn't recommend it. This paywall model isn't unusual. In fact, it's been hugely successful overseas. Reuters reports that around two-thirds of leading newspapers in the EU and the US now use some form of online paywall, and that number continues to rise. Print and digital advertising revenues have long been stagnating or in decline, and there are only so many cover price increases readers will accept. Digital subscriptions have become an essential additional revenue stream. That money helps to pay journalists' salaries, fund technology, and keep the lights on in local newspaper offices. Quite simply, it helps local newspapers stay in business and continue to represent their communities. In response to one negative comment, I asked, should journalists work for free? Some people genuinely replied yes. They thought they should. Really? Should someone complete a university degree, rack up £50,000 of debt, slog through journalism qualifications like the NCTJ diploma and senior exams, learn to drive and maintain a car to report locally, and endure the painfully slow process of mastering 100 words per minute shorthand, all to earn nothing? If we want a reliable, accurate and engaging local press, one that champions communities, holds power to account and remains free in the proper sense of the word, free from censorship, intimidation or restriction, then the money has to come from somewhere. That somewhere is subscriptions. Local newspapers don't pay huge salaries. That's no secret. A journalist from a national newspaper recently asked me whether the local pay is still paid badly. Pay is modest, yes, but our journalists are paid, in part, by our digital subscribers. Those subscribers aren't just supporting a newspaper, they're investing in their local community and valuing the work we do. Somewhere along the way, as local news was handed out freely online, the value of our industry was eroded. Digital subscriptions are one way of restoring that value, whether you're subscribing to a national title or backing your local paper. And I promise you this, you'll like it. It's satisfying not to hit that irritating hard gate every time you click a story. And it's satisfying, too, to know that in some one small way, you've made a commitment to the place you live. And there's a note at the bottom saying, currently £4 for 4 months and then £3.99 per month. and then gives a website address that you can click on to. Right, Jackie is now going to read a news item from our MP, Danny Chambers, please.
Yeah, and it's entitled, "We Need to Invest in Winchester's Hospital." Recently, I found myself in A&E at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The staff were nothing short of a godsend. My visit was a reminder of something far more important than my own problems, just how vital Winchester's Hospital is to our community. Services in Winchester's Hospital, including our A&E and consultant-led maternity, must not leave. The conservative plan for our services was to ship them off to Basingstoke, leaving a backlog of maintenance at our hospital. And now, Labour has spent millions of pounds of public money purchasing a site for a hospital that may not even be built, and even if it is, will not be ready until the 2040s at the earliest. Most people would agree that spending scarce public money in this way is absurd, when the hospital we rely on today continues to struggle with ageing infrastructure and years of underinvestment. Over the last few years, I have had many meetings with hospital staff and managers about the condition of the buildings. Multiple wings of the hospital are in need of urgent roof repairs, ventilation systems need replacing, and new backup generators are needed to ensure emergency power continues to be available 24/7. I have raised these issues repeatedly in Parliament because the staff working in our hospital and the patients who rely on it deserve facilities that are safe, modern, and fit for purpose. My determination is simple. We must save services for the long term and secure the investment needed to ensure Winchester Hospital and its A&E are world-class, properly equipped and worthy of the extraordinary staff who work there and the patients they care for. Across the NHS, corridor care has become an all too familiar sign of a health service stretched beyond its limits. The reform the NHS urgently needs is stronger preventative care and stronger community services. We must fix the front door of the NHS, making it easier to see a GP, access mental health support, and find an NHS dentist. When people cannot access those services, problems worsen, and more patients end up in A&E. We also desperately need to fix social care. Right now, around 180 hospital beds locally are occupied by people who are medically fit to leave hospital but cannot be discharged because care is not available in the community.
Thank you, Jackie. Now, a quick look at some events that are coming up in the near future that you might be interested in. Sunday the 12th of April, Sounds of the 60s at the Winchester Theatre Royal. Monday the 13th, the Big Royal General Knowledge Quiz. This is a quiz also at the Theatre Royal Winchester. Sunday the 19th, MRF Festival 26 at the Nutshell Winchester. What is that? It's the festival culminates the year's work for MRF, the aims of which are to support and nurture young composers and to bring playing, singing and listening to contemporary music to a wider audience. So that's at the Nutshell, Sunday the 19th. Thursday the 23rd, ELO again. This is the Theatre Royal and this is a tribute band to the band ELO. Sunday the 25th, there's A Season to Sing by Alsford Community Choir. That is at the Church of St John the Baptist, East Street, Alsford. And finally, Saturday the 2nd of May, Tremendous Winchester, a guided walking tour of trees of Winchester. Well, before we go on to items of the general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any... They always rib me about this. Will rise at about 6:20 a.m. and set again at about 7:50 p.m. So, go on to the items of general news. The first from Deborah, please.
New mural suddenly removed. A mural on Winchester's newest food court has been suddenly removed from an unknown reason. Helch Market on Upper Brook Street painted a mural on the external wall facing the High Street in February, which has since been painted over. The picture depicting a robber stealing from an ATM machine and getting chased by a policeman, it's rather sort of like a cartoon, was shortly removed from the wall after a month, with no explanation from the business. According to Winchester City Council, there weren't any planning stipulations around the street art, and the council didn't have any involvement or correspondence regarding its removal. An opening date for Helch is yet to be confirmed. It was last reported to be opening at the end of February. However, according to owner Jamal Benamor, it's been a very complex project. When completed, the speakeasy bar inside the venue is said to fit 150 people. The food hall will fit 200 people, as well as 100 people outside in the beer garden. The venue will operate as a food hall from 11:30 in the morning until 10 in the evening. But its premises licence runs until 3 a.m., meaning guests can experience live music and events throughout the night. The Chronicle contacted Helch about the removal. To be alerted to the opening of night, visit the Helch website.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
County's new High Sheriff pledges to champion sport. A new High Sheriff has taken up the post in Hampshire with a pledge to champion community sport. William Maltby from Borkhurst was formally declared High Sheriff during a ceremony held at the Great Hall in Winchester on March the 25th. The event was attended by the High Court Judge, Mr Justice Linden, fellow judges, the Lord Lieutenant and the outgoing High Sheriff, Sue Elton. Mr Maltby said, "I am deeply honoured to serve as High Sheriff of Hampshire, where I have lived nearly all my life. I'm particularly looking forward to encouraging those who work with and volunteer within law and order and crime prevention services. My theme for the year is community sport, especially for the young and underprivileged. I'm passionate about the benefits of sport, both physical and mental, and as a force for good in crime prevention." A keen sportsman, Mr. Maltby has played racket sports at both national and international levels and is also an enthusiastic golfer and sailor.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, your piece, please.
Concerns over makeup of Mid-Hampshire Authority. The new council for Mid-Hampshire is set to be a tightly fought political battleground between the Tories and Lib Dems. The four current councils, Winchester, Test Valley, New Forest and East Hampshire, currently have 145 councillors. The new authority will come into being in 2028. This includes 63 Conservatives, 57 Lib Dems, 2 Labour, 7 Greens, 1 Reform, and 15 councillors who are either independent or belong to smaller parties. A senior Hampshire councillor has shared his concerns over the scale of the new Mid-Hampshire authority. Councillor Nick Adams-King, Conservative for Blackwater Ward in Test Valley and leader of Hampshire County Council, said that the new authority would need a full boundary review. He said that the current political makeup of the area will inevitably shape the political baseline of the new authority. He said, "A significant proportion of the wards being transferred from both Test Valley and the New Forest into the proposed new council area are currently represented by Liberal Democrat councillors. That will inevitably shape the political baseline of any future authority, and it helps explain why Liberal Democrats in Eastleigh, Southampton and Hampshire have been so supportive of this particular version of the proposals. I wouldn't describe it as gerrymandering, but it is fair to say that there appears to have been some political calculation in deciding which parishes are being moved into the new council. That said, the bigger issue here is scale. The government's proposal creates a very large authority, bringing together communities with quite different identities, needs, and voting patterns. Because of that, it is extremely difficult to draw any meaningful conclusions from current council numbers about what the future political makeup will be. Before any elections can take place, there will have to be a full boundary review. This is an independent process that must meet Electoral Commission requirements. That process takes time, often many months, so there is still, I think, significant uncertainty both about the timing of those elections and the eventual political composition of the council. What is clear, however, is that this will be a very large and diverse authority. That creates a real risk that representation becomes more remote and less connected to local communities, and ensuring residents continue to feel properly represented will be a major challenge for any party. Councillor Martin Todd, the Liberal Democrat leader of Winchester City Council, was more positive about the change, but said that the size of Mid-Hampshire would be a new challenge. He added that the number of councillors across the authority is set to drop to approximately 92. Councillor Todd said, "It's a helpful analysis and fits with what we're hearing on the doorstep. Elections in Winchester usually come down to a race between the Lib Dems and Conservatives. These figures say it's set to be a similar story across the new unitary council."
Thank you, Jackie. My piece is headed A&E Warning for Upcoming Strikes. And it is a slightly out-of-date thing because it's already started. A doctor from Hampshire Hospitals has warned that the high pressure the emergency department will be under during the doctor's strikes. The industrial action will start just after the Easter holiday weekend from 7 a.m. on April the 7th until 6:59 a.m. on April the 13th. The Hospital Trust is concerned about a spike in attendance after the bank holiday weekend and are advising people to only visit the emergency department if they are seriously unwell, injured, or in need of emergency care. Dr. Krishnan Patel from Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital said, "It's important for people to understand that coming to the emergency department is not a shortcut. It should only be used for those who are critically unwell or very sick. We are overstretched, but we will absolutely ensure that we will be able to provide the right care for the right people at the right time. We can't do this without the help of the public." The Trust are advising people to use alternative providers like GPs, pharmacists and 111 for medical help. Dr. Patel emphasised the importance of turning to GPs as they have access to full medical histories and will be able to continue care in the community. She said, "There are avenues they can use that are easily available and they won't have to spend a lot of time waiting in the emergency department." Deborah, your piece, please.
Unsung heroes honoured at awards event. Unsung heroes have been honoured for their outstanding service to the community. The Mayor of Winchester's Community Awards recognised 105 people across the district at a ceremony held at Winchester Guildhall on Thursday, March the 12th. Winners included hospital staff, volunteers, sports teams and advisers supporting people with learning disabilities. Councillor Ashwell, Mayor of Winchester, said, "The Mayor's Awards are a wonderful opportunity to recognise individuals and groups across our district who go above and beyond in service to others. Much of what they do happens quietly and without any expectation of recognition. yet it makes a profound difference to the lives of people in our communities. The 50 award certificates celebrated efforts from a wide range of organisations, including Trinity Kitchen Crew, Winchester Go LD, Winchester Good Neighbours, Citizens Advice, Friends of the Family, the Meon Valley Active Retirement Association, Friends of King Alfred's Buses, and the Winchester Beacon. Nurses from the Nick Jonas Award at Royal Hampshire County Hospital were among those recognised. Active LD, a community interest company that helps individuals with learning disabilities get active and build confidence, also saw its advisors recognised. Betty Chadwick, Executive Director of Active LD, said, "This was a very special moment for everyone at Active LD. We're grateful to the Mayor of Winchester for acknowledging our LD advisors with this award, which recognises the incredible contribution they make to our organisation and community. Active LD is proudly participating, and our amazing advisors play a key role in shaping everything we do to help people with learning disabilities become more active. A huge well done and thank you to Evie, Dave, Ryan, Daniel, Matthew and James. We are incredibly proud of you." The Whiteley Wanderers Pumas girls football team were also among those honoured on the night. James White from Whiteley Wanderers FC said, "It was an incredible evening and we're so proud of the Pumas who have been recognised by the Mayor of Winchester in this way. The girls are an inspiration, future leaders, and they're doing their club, their community and themselves proud." Council Ashwell said, "The nominations tell a story of kindness, dedication and generosity of spirit, and together they represent the very best of our Winchester district." He continued, "These remarkable individuals and organisations remind us that the true strength of our district lies not only in its history and heritage, but in the compassion, commitment and community spirit of its people. It's been a real privilege to recognise and celebrate their contributions."
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
2,200 speeding drivers caught. A new initiative to boost road safety across even more local communities has caught more than 2,200 speeding offences since its launch last year. In August 2025, Hampshire Police's Safer Roads Unit began deploying two police motorcyclists equipped with handheld laser and video speed detection devices. The riders target locations where traditional camera vans cannot easily operate, such as rural routes and cameras near schools. A spokesperson for Hampshire Police said, "The team has been incredibly effective and have recorded a shocking number of offenders, more than 2,200 so far. What originally started as a trial has been so successful that it's now a permanent part of the Safer Roads Unit. If local policing teams raise concerns about speeding in their communities, the motorcycle enforcement team can deploy to help address the problem and provide reassurance to local residents that these concerns are being taken seriously." Paul Freeman, who leads the team, said, "This is a new initiative that has been a huge success. We'd have been able to respond to community concerns more quickly and in places we haven't been able to visit in the past. Bikes are a lot smaller than the speed camera vans, so can be parked almost anywhere. We can't get the vans near a school, for example, but the bikes can go everywhere. They're also great for visibility and public engagement. You can't see the person in the van operating the camera, but the motorcyclists are right there, so we can interact with members of the public about the bikes and explain what we do."
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
A really good idea to grow. Thousands of trees are set to take root in a national park thanks to fertiliser made from urine collected at a Hampshire music festival. The eco-friendly fertiliser was produced by Bristol startup NPK Recovery using urine collected from festival goers at the Boomtown Festival near Winchester in July last year. The company processed waste from a toilet block used by 700 attendees, turning it into 540 litres of fertiliser during the 2025 event. This fertiliser will be used over the next 3 years to grow 4,500 native trees, including beech, on the edge of Banau Brycheiniog, or Brecon Beacons, National Park in Wales. Lucy Bell Reeves, co-founder of NPK Recovery, said, "This project will be the first time it has been trialled on trees. Using a waste product to grow trees is a circular solution that can revitalise our struggling native species. We need to stop flushing crop and tree-growing nutrients down the loo and start using them to increase our fertiliser security. I love the idea that by the end of this three-year project, revellers will have created a fledgling Welsh forest which could flourish for hundreds of years." In April last year, NPK Recovery also collected 1,000 litres of urine from women's urinals at the TCS London Marathon, which was processed into fertiliser.
Thank you, Jackie. There were some very odd expressions on people's faces around the table during that. We won't delve any further, I think.
I'm trying not to make the obvious.
Yes. Right. More than 190 volunteer roles. More than 190 volunteer opportunities with a first aid charity are on offer across the South East. St John Ambulance is seeking to recruit 1,500 new emergency responders across England. Opportunities exist in all counties with locations including Andover, Alton and Winchester. Emergency responders support frontline first aid and clinical teams, providing care and reassurance at public events and in communities. Kevin Munday, Chief Commissioner for St John's Ambulance, said, "Volunteering with St John's Ambulance is one of the most rewarding things you can do. And as an emergency responder, you really are there in the moments that matter. Volunteers will receive full training and support, and no previous first aid experience is required. Candidates must be aged 18 or over, able to stay calm under pressure, and able to communicate clearly. Emergency responders are typically asked to volunteer around 100 hours per year. Apply on the St John's Ambulance website." Deborah, please.
Tea Room reopens. A tea room is welcoming visitors after it reopened at the Hospital of St Cross. The 100 Men's Hall Tea Room reopened on Monday, March the 2nd, bringing renewed life to the medieval almshouses after the quieter winter months. Claire MacDonald, who works at the tea room, said the reopening has transformed the atmosphere. She said, "It's wonderful to have the tea room open again. It really brings the Hospital of St Cross back to life. After the quieter winter months and closures, there's a real sense of energy returning, with visitors enjoying the tea room once more and the warm and welcoming atmosphere. The tea room is housed in the historic 100 Men's Hall, where food was once given daily to those in need, something that still shapes its purpose today."
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
A man of 34 found with weapons. A man who was found with a cache of weapons, including a baseball bat, a hatchet and a knife, has been charged with threatening to kill a woman. Dominic Ettridge, 34, of no fixed abode, stopped while driving a Peugeot car and was arrested on the A303 near Bullington Cross at around 1 a.m. on Tuesday, March the 31st. Police arrested Ettridge after receiving a report that a woman had been threatened by a man known to her at around 11 p.m. on Monday the 30th of March. A number of weapons, including baseball bats, a hatchet and a knife, were located inside the vehicle. Ettridge has been charged with making threats to kill, possessing an offensive weapon and in a public place, possessing a knife, blade, sharp pointed article in a public place, driving a motor vehicle otherwise than in accordance with a license, failing to provide a specimen for analysis, and using a motor vehicle on a road without third-party insurance. Ettridge is due to appear at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on Wednesday the 1st of April.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie.
Domestic abuse help. A new service is aiming to tackle domestic abuse by reaching perpetrators early and supporting long-term change. Launched by Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones, the scheme covers Hampshire and the Isle of Wight and represents the largest investment in tackling perpetrators the two counties have ever seen, at nearly £1 million per year. Ms. Jones said, "It's important we intervene with people causing harm at the earliest opportunity. Domestic abuse has a devastating and long-lasting impact on both victims and their families. We know many perpetrators often have a number of other challenges, including drug and alcohol use or mental health issues. To effect real change and empower people to move forward and enjoy healthy relationships, we need to look beyond an individual's behaviours and focus on what their needs are. By working in partnership, we can explore innovative solutions to provide comprehensive support to perpetrators, while keeping the safety of victims and survivors, including children, at the heart of everything we do." The service is being delivered by the Hampton Trust, a charity specialising in early intervention programmes. In 2024, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary recorded 26,238 domestic abuse flagged crimes.
Goodness. Right, my piece is help with heating oil bills. A new initiative has been announced by the council to assist Hampshire residents during the current heating oil price surge. Hampshire County Council has announced access to £586,000 fund from the government, aiming to provide relief to vulnerable and low-income households affected by the steep rise in heating oil costs triggered by the US-Israel conflict with Iran. This funding is part of the larger £53 million support package through the Crisis Resilience Fund. More than 22,000 households in Hampshire use heating oil, but due to limited resources, the scheme is restricted to those most in need. The County Council spokesman said, "Local residents who use heating oil as their main fuel will be able to apply for this support." Deborah, please.
Teen thanked for helping to save life. A teenager has been recognised for helping to save his neighbour's life. Jack Palmer, a 15-year-old from Alton, was at home on a Saturday afternoon in December when a medical emergency unfolded next door, involving his neighbour Tony. Hattie, Tony's daughter, quickly called 999 and began CPR, while Tony's wife Elaine went to find a defibrillator. Jack stepped in to help, locating the device and rushing it to the scene. He assisted in setting up the defibrillator and delivered the first shock before taking over CPR from the exhausted Hattie. Elaine then administered a second shock before Alton's on-call firefighters arrived at the Hollybourne home. Thanks in part to Jack's quick thinking and calm response, Tony was able to return home in time for Christmas and is expected to make a full recovery. Jack was later invited to Alton Fire Station, where he and his mother were formally thanked, and he was presented with a Chief Commendation Award by Assistant Chief Fire Officer Ben Allen. Tony, his family and Jack's head teacher were also present at the ceremony on Tuesday evening. Josh Grant, watch manager at Alton Fire Station, said, "Jack's actions undoubtedly helped his save his neighbour's life, and we want to ensure that he gets the recognition he deserves."
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Inspiring local talk. A popular Winchester event celebrating the people and stories of Hyde is set to return this spring with a new series of engaging talks. Hyde in Conversation will take place at St Bartholomew's Church across 3 evenings, offering audiences the chance to hear from a diverse range of speakers with strong local connections. Over the years, the series has built a reputation for shining a light on the individuals who make Hyde such a vibrant place to live and work. The programme opens on Friday, April the 24th, with Dan Hooton in conversation with Caroline Scott. A Winchester local, Dan joined the Royal Navy after leaving Peter Simmons College and has since developed a career as a security advisor in high-risk environments. His work has taken him round the world, including involvement in major incidents such as the 2008 Mumbai hotel attacks and the 2015 Nepal earthquake. More recently, he's worked in Ukraine and the Middle East. Last year, he also took on the gruelling Marathon des Sables in Morocco, running 150 miles in 7 days, while raising thousands of pounds for a charity supporting former and serving members of his regiment.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie?
Writer tells parents World War II story in new book. A writer has published a book telling the story of his parents' lives during the Second World War. Mike Cosgrove, who attended Peter Simmons College, has written The War My Parents Fought, a biographical account of his parents, Bob and Dorothy, and their wartime experiences. The book traces the lives of the couple, both of whom lived and worked in and around Winchester before the war. Dorothy, who grew up in Kingsworthy and attended the County Girls' Grammar School, undertook several wartime roles, including volunteering at Air Raid Precautions Headquarters and later working as part of the administrative staff at Saunders Row near Romsey. Meanwhile, Bob volunteered for the Army and was commissioned as an officer, serving overseas in the Middle East before taking part in heavy fighting across North Africa and Italy. He later returned to England ahead of the D-Day landings, with his experiences reflecting the dangers faced by soldiers throughout the conflict. The book highlights the resilience of the generation who lived through the war, with Cosgrove describing their outlook as one of determination and stoicism. The War My Parents Fought is available in paperback by contacting the author directly at mike_cos, C-O-S, at hotmail.com. And there's a photo, presumably from the book, to go with it, and presumably of Bob and Dorothy's wedding day. He's in army uniform. She's holding a huge bunch of white lilies, and they're in a churchyard. And the guests are very much of their day, lots of teenage boys in short trousers.
Thank you, Jackie. Bridge is likely to be renamed. A Hampshire motorway footbridge looks set to be renamed following the recent allegations against Scott Mills, according to The Sun. The Scott Mills Bridge, located at Fleet Services on the M3 in Hampshire, is expected to be rebranded after the Eastleigh-born presenter was dismissed by the BBC. A plaque which showed his name and dedication has reportedly been removed. His sacking followed the emergence of a police investigation into historic sexual offence allegations against a teenage boy. The bridge, which is owned by Welcome Break, was given its name in 2016 following a light-hearted campaign led by Mills and his former co-host, Chris Stark, on their BBC Radio 1 show. It sits between junctions 4A and 5 on the M3 and features a commemorative plaque. The source said it is highly likely Welcome Break will rename the bridge in light of Scott's being fired, especially given the nature of the allegations. Welcome Break has declined to comment. Mills was taken off air after a complaint reached the BBC. He last presented the Radio 2 breakfast show on Tuesday. BBC management acted swiftly following the complaint, which is understood to relate to alleged offences dating back to between 1997 and 2000. Deborah, please.
Worthy Players, The cast of The Worthy Players is ready to welcome audiences for their spring production, which this year is Rumours, a farce by Neil Simon. The plot surrounds an anniversary dinner party, which takes a mysterious turn, with guests desperately imagining the worst and setting off the rumours of the play's title. The construction of the set is near completion and rehearsals are going well. Performances are on April the 17th, 18th, 24th and 25th at 7:30 in the evening at the Jubilee Hall in Kingsworthy. More information from theworthyplayers.co.uk.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Help for those with real pain. A peer support group is helping people find hope and community in the face of long-term pain. Based in Winchester, the group supports people living with chronic pain, defined as lasting longer than 3 months. Set up last year by Stephen Martin and Dr. David Wilson, senior lecturers in physiotherapy at the University of Winchester, the group runs in collaboration with the Winchester Health Clinic and meets once a month. Mr. Martin said, "Being in a room with other people who understand what you're going through can be very therapeutic in itself. Members live with a wide range of conditions, including back pain, arthritis, fibromyalgia, and often have not responded to traditional medical treatments. The group offers practical advice and coping strategies, as well as yoga, tai chi, and meditation sessions to help manage daily life. Support and understanding play a central role in the group's impact. Mr. Martin is clear that the group does not offer cures, but instead helps people adjust their outlook. He said, "This isn't a place where we will fix your pain. It's a place where you will learn to accept the pain and manage it in ways which improve the quality of your life." To find out more, email stephen.martin, that's Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, dot Martin, at winchester.ac.uk.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
On the run. Samba the capybara was still on the loose as the Chronicle went to press. She escaped from Marwell Zoo last month and has been spotted in the nearby River Itchen. The giant rodent has so far defied all attempts to track her down, including by specialist dog units and drones. Her bid for freedom has captured the attention of media across the world and the hearts of locals.
Thank you, Jackie. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. Before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Now, would you please put the memory stick and the address label back in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Well, thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to our readers today. Deborah.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Jackie.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until the next time, goodbye.